I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of The Memo. It is Wednesday, September 9th, 2015. I'm Derek Russell. Here back with me today is Brad Locke. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm back. I've been better.
Well, good to have you.
I'm okay.
Is it because you're here? Or what?
It's because it's, I guess it's sinus season apparently for me.
Because it's 100 degrees outside and that means it's time to sniffle?
Naturally. Yeah. I don't know. My sinuses follow no normal pattern. They just flare up when they want to.
I don't think any sinuses follow normal patterns.
No. It could at least be fall if I'm going to have this mess, but no, it's not.
I'm good with fall coming.
Me too.
Bring on the fall. How's the child? The child.
She's good. She's 4 weeks old today and hasn't tried to leave yet, so that's, I guess she likes us.
She hasn't tried to leave well enough.
A couple of our kids tried to
run
away.
Did you give her the option?
A couple of our kids tried to run away one time, and we thought they'd come back, and they ended up walking way down the street and going to the neighbor's house.
Well, if a 4-week-old can do that, that's really impressive.
We had to go get them. So.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, you never know.
You could probably get some money out of that somehow.
Yeah.
Our four-week-year-old, that's what I said just there. Our 4-week-old tried to get away from us.
You can edit that, Chris, right?
No, it's fine. Leave it in. I want him to know that I messed it up. And it keeps me humble. But we're glad you're back with us. We had
me too.
Lauren and Chris filled in for you last week.
I really thought Lauren would take my job.
She's probably going to be perfectly honest with you. She
it'll just string me along.
She's a little more chipper coming in here.
Yeah, well,
turn it up to 11 a little bit.
Chipper is not in my vocabulary.
That's fine. Well, you just used it correctly.
Chippy so. Is. I can get chippy with you.
Chippy. Oh, yeah. Now I know you can get chippy.
Get chippy with it.
Well, don't ever say that again, please. That's terrible. But we are glad to have you back, and we'll enjoy Lauren coming back from time to time when you are unable or unwilling.
Yes. <'Cause>, ratings will go up.
Unwilling does sound like something you would be from time to time.
It's possible.
And Chris filled in as well. Held his own without you.
He did. I thought so.
Do you just feel replaceable? Am I making you feel
pretty much
completely? Just
I mean, yeah.
It's okay. No, you're good. I'm glad you're back because we have this.
Tell. We do. We have something.
You won't
special.
Look at me, but we have.
I need to
reposition
my chair at some point.
It's fine. Move way past
We're
this.
We're still figuring this out.
Talk about what all we have on today's show, and our first guest is our. General reporter Zach Orsborn is joining us. Zach, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about you?
Doing well. You have done a story that ran. Remind me when this ran. Did it run Sunday?
I think. It ran Sunday.
Ran Sunday. Mm-hmm. About minority businesses here in town, based on census reports from the past 8 years.
Yeah. Well, the last census report that actually had this data was 2007.
So 8 years ago.
Yeah, kind of slow.
Kind of. Yeah. Tell us. Tell us a little bit about what this means for the community.
Well, I got the idea because Mayor Jason Shelton gave a speech at a symposium encouraging minority businesses to stay and grow. And so I kind of wanted to see how, if they're actually if they have steps to actually engage in that. And I found out that they've been pretty active in trying to reach out to minority-owned businesses to get more minority contractors and stuff like that. There's a community outreach task force which kind of goes out and seeks minority-owned businesses, and this city council was the first to actually fund that task force. So they're taking some big steps to add some diversity to the city.
So you mentioned the census from 2007. Kind of how does that correlate with 2015 now?
I tried to get some data for 2015. There just wasn't a place for that.
It's kind of a moving target to hit at,
yeah,
I guess.
But I think that with the mayor, those numbers have probably gone up. There's a database where minority-owned businesses can register, mm-hmm, and there wasn't that many. There's only 20, but I think that there will be a push to make it known that you're minority-owned businesses and this is how you register and get help and stuff like that.
Are there goals being set moving forward to hit marks?
I asked him if they've written a plan or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And he said that he's keeping an open door policy for now. There's not really any set goals, but they definitely want to. They've been getting community leaders to call minority-owned businesses and reach out to them.
And then you talked to several specific business owners within this, so kind of tell us a little bit about who you touched on.
Well, I talked to Wilbur Collum at first. He is a business genius. He owns hotels in Tanzania, 300 apartments in Starkville, all kinds of stuff. He owns a printing press that prints African-American romance novels, too. So, and his brother has done a lot of contracting work in Tupelo with the, I'm not sure the exact name, but it's Column Construction or something like that. He told me a lot. He gave me a lot of background on how minorities were kind of never allowed into the normal commerce system because of segregation. And there's still a lot of habits of segregation that kind of exist. And also talked to Janice Scott. She owns her own realty by herself. And she found that it was really hard to get startup money. There was a study I found, I think it was in Forbes, from the Kauffman Foundation, and they said even though that minorities rely more on startup money and loans like that, they still get rejected more than white-owned firms, and they still they don't get as much money. They have higher interest rates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there was an inequality with that. So hopefully, with the new city push, it'll kind of even that out.
Right. This sounds like something that really interested you, that you kind of went after on this one.
Yeah.
Zach, thanks for joining us today. It was a good job.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, Derek. Well, buddy, it's you and me to talk about some crime, shall we?
Crime?
Yeah.
I tried to fill in for your larger – what size shoe do you wear?
12.
Oh, I'm 13. I'm wearing
– what?
That's,
I'm kind of jealous now.
It's not any.
Suddenly feel
threatened. I was going to say, I filled in for your shoes trying to do crime reports while you were gone.
Suddenly feel threatened.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
There's this channel that I watch. My wife watches it more than I do. Investigation Discovery.
I think that's an epidemic. Everybody watches
Investigation
Discovery.
Yeah. And there's, I guess it's a new show called Killer Instinct.
With Chris Hansen,
who y'all may recall used to
Catch a Predator.
Catch a Predator. He would show up in your kitchen or something if you're.
Well, hopefully not your kitchen.
Well, someone else's kitchen. That's what it was.
On air.
As I recall, I watched a few episodes. They'd get the suspected pedophile to show up at someone's house, thinking he was
going
to meet someone, and turned out he got to meet Chris Hansen as well as
But there were cookies. So.
There were cookies.
Yeah, and cameras, so you were real forever embarrassed.
Some real creeps on that show. But he's got a new show now, Killer Instinct, and most of y'all listening probably remember the Adam Mays situation.
Case?
Whatever you want to call it, the case, that's the word.
Incident?
Back in, I guess, 2012 it was.
April of 2012.
First, give us some background on that, Derek, and then talk about the show featured that and featured some local actors.
Yeah. The funny thing was, when I was doing the story on this ran last week in Scene, but we had so much to talk about, we didn't touch on it, but the show aired Labor Day this past Monday night, and it's going to re-air again. Adam Mays, I don't remember the case.
I
knowing now, going back and looking through it, I wasn't at the Journal at that time, so, you know, a lot of you guys, and I know Chris... really were involved in the situation, and I remember inklings of it or, you know, going on, but I did not have a whole lot of background going into the story, but this guy Adam Mays killed a friend of his, this lady and her oldest daughter, and abducted the two younger daughters.
Yeah, and there was a manhunt.
Hid in the woods with them for several days, and ended up being caught in the alpine community.
Did they end up, I'm trying to refresh my memory, Chris, they ended up shooting him? I mean, or is he in jail? I can't remember, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
He's dead.
I thought the manhunt ended with him getting shot.
I think you're right. I think I do remember that, because I think when they had the follow-up court cases, maybe his mom was there, because his mom was charged too, if I remember, because she was an accomplice in it. But, you know, the other thing about that is, and probably most people who are listening could tell you, I think a lot of people remember where they were when he was captured
or
when he was found dead. You know, it's kind of funny that Derek doesn't remember it at all, because we were talking in the newsroom yesterday and Jenna remembered exactly where she was. And I remember I was at a softball game, and you just kind of remember that moment, because Northeast Mississippi was kind of holding its breath for a couple of days. You know, what's happening with this guy?
What's funny is the one part I do remember about this is that he killed himself.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That's about the only thing I actually do remember is that he he shot himself and was taken to hospital in New Albany in critical condition, but ended up dying shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I remember I was still covering Mississippi State at that point, but that's one of those stories that I remember. I was probably in Starkville when I heard about it, but I think J.B. Clark was our crime reporter at the time, was the one following that story closely. But anyway, that was a big deal, not just locally, but I guess it kind of went national. And now we've got the, like we said, the Killer Instinct show documenting that. And again, I got some local actors, names people might know. I knew a couple of people.
Yeah, when this was actually filmed, I think this is only the third episode of the series. It just premiered a couple of weeks ago, but this was actually filmed well over a year ago.
Okay.
But Margaret McGrath and her two daughters, of course, playing the Bain family characters, Joanne Bain, the mother that was murdered, and Kenny Cook, a local actor as well, playing Joanne's husband in the in the episode, several. Dr. John Morris playing one of the police detectives on the show. So it was very cool that they just kind of all happened to answer a casting call and went to film over a weekend about a year ago and then show up, and they all figured out they knew each other. They were filming the thing.
It's pretty cool.
Did not know at the time what the casting call they were answering was going to be for. Obviously, it was, and then you find out that I guess that your kids are going to be murdered on screen. It's probably a little hard to fathom, but
apparently it was a pretty intense experience.
Yeah, Margaret said everybody was very professional. Though it was handled very well. It was obviously these true crime shows. They're no dummies to this. They're used to doing things like this and keeping people comfortable with the subject matter, no matter how gruesome it is, which in this case is extremely gruesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, after, I think they said they filmed last October, so after nearly a year, it got its premiere on Monday night on ID, which there's a lot of these types of shows. I don't watch them, but like if you look at the lineup, it's some variation of the same title on every block of programming.
Pretty much the entire network is about murder.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Based on murder. And I'll be honest, I mean, I've watched some of the shows and they're good, but I admit some of the promos can be a little bit off-putting.
It's basically,
it's like, hey, this show's about wives who kill their cheating husbands. And they're almost...
Some of them are weirdly specific, too.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Weirdly specific. I'd have to pull up a list of
here's
titles.
Here's the show where they only kill the mailmans. I mean, it just kind of, some of them just seem weirdly specific.
I don't know. I mean, again, there's some.
It's kind of, if you
good
like.
Stuff on there, but some of the promo is just really kind of off putting. I understand they're trying to, you know, draw an audience, and ultimately it's supposed to be something that engages and entertains people in some way, but. Almost seems
educational.
Educational, exploitative, whatever.
I wouldn't even go that far.
Sorry.
I would say educational. Because for me, like, that's really interesting, that whole case. I didn't know anything about it, or did not really remember anything about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
So some of the, you know, I'll catch myself watching Dateline occasionally on a Friday night. So it's kind of like 24-hour Dateline.
Here's some of the shows they have. Deadly Women, Homicide Hunter, Blood Relatives, Who the Bleep Did I Marry, I Almost Got Away With It, Nightmare Next Door, Deadly Affairs, Fear Thy Neighbor, you get the idea. Surviving Evil, I haven't watched that one yet.
So.
Yeah. A Crime to Remember.
It's a good way to spend a holiday locked in watching ID.
you'll never sleep again if you watch too many of those shows, basically.
And so, Derek, for people who missed the show Monday night, is there another chance for them to watch it? Is it available online?
I know they're re-airing it. I'm not sure when. I know I said earlier that they were going to re-air it on Thursday, and I believe I'm incorrect in that it's Thursday night, but should be coming on again soon. You can definitely look for it on channel 111 on Comcast, DirecTV channel 285, or Dish Network 192. Check your listings on those for Investigation Discovery. As far as online, investigationdiscovery.com does have the full episode for you to stream, as well as Amazon or iTunes. So there's several ways to find it in case you're wanting to educate yourself and see some local talent on display.
There you go. Good stuff. Okay, so it's Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk about some food. We got Jenna Parsons, our food editor, in here with us. Jenna, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Let's talk food, Jenna. Let's talk about our cook of the week. Always a popular thing on the website. Ann Simpson lives outside Boonville, is our cook of the week, and very interesting story. She's from Wisconsin, born and raised, now lives here in Mississippi. Grew up dirt poor, basically.
Said so herself.
And that's kind of how she learned to cook, was just basically by cooking whatever you could find, which I found can often be the best food. I don't know about you, but...
That's what she said, and she said that her children get a kick out of it when she cooks, because when you don't have a lot of money, you use spices because they're relatively inexpensive. And yeah. So her children like to watch her make a dish and just watch her arms flying into the cabinet as she's adding a little bit of this and a little bit of that. One of the problems that Anne had when we did the interview was coming up with the recipes, because she really doesn't use them. She just, nothing's the same twice.
Right.
So she really had to stretch to get things written down for me, but I appreciate that she did.
You know, I used to read Patrick McManus a lot. I don't know if anybody knows who that is. Outdoor Life columnist since forever. Very funny guy. He would always talk about making a, when he's out camping or hunting, making a what you got stew. That's what he called it. What you got, throw it in the pot.
Right.
So leads me to ask you, what's kind of your favorite thing that you've made that you just had to kind of make up? Make with what you had on hand.
I don't know. You know, there's
probably when you're in college.
Well,
maybe.
Some things always go together: pasta, cheese, tomatoes, onions, garlic. You can almost always pull a meal together out of things like that.
Yeah.
And I had a cook one time tell me that his son came home from college unexpectedly. Yeah. Mom was still at work. Kid comes through the door, says, "Dad, I'm starved." Dad goes in the pantry, pulls out a giant box of Kraft macaroni and cheese with shells,
yes.
A can of Rotel,
and
cooks the macaroni and cheese, adds the can of Rotel, threw in a can of chicken, and it was like really fast chicken spaghetti. And the kid, who was probably 18 or 19, just ate the whole casserole.
Wow.
And I have actually made that a couple of times. And it is, I mean, to be that simple, and it is all processed, I know. But sometimes you got to have quick, and it's good.
I'm going to leave now, Derek.
I will see you all later.
Eat some of that right now.
That sounds amazing.
It was good.
Anyway, back to our cook of the week, Jenna Ann Simpson. Like I said, grew up in Wisconsin, as they say.
Right.
Moved to Mississippi in 1991, which really, another thing that's interesting about her, she's got the 4 children, 5 grandchildren, really active in that community up there, drives the Northeast Mississippi Community Service bus. I mean, she really seems to enjoy helping those people and sharing her food with them.
That is her heart. And Anne told me that she gets up in the morning about 5, because sometimes she has to start her route at 6, and it takes 2 hours to pick up. I think she said there are like 20-something people on the route, and several of them she has to help into the bus and off of the bus. So it takes her 2 hours to get all these folks on the bus and deliver them to the class. Then she goes to the family business, Steve's Tire, where she works as the secretary and bookkeeper for 5 hours. Then she goes back, gets on her bus, goes back to the place, picks all these people up again, takes 2 hours to deliver them home, and then still gets home and feels like cooking for her family. She is amazing. She is a true definition of a hard worker.
Cook of the week.
I was considering going and making the mac and cheese and Rotel and then taking a nap, but now that would seem very wasteful after you said all that.
Yeah, I guess so. Speaking of just eating, making something out of what you can find. Your column today, Jenna, has to do with rice and a dish you would make often in college.
Right.
A type of brown rice, but not
it's not like the brown rice that you buy in the bag and has all the healthy benefits.
So this was something you ate a lot in college and just kind of you had a certain recipe, but you would add kind of what you had on hand, wouldn't you?
Right. If we had extra money, we would add mushrooms or green onions or sometimes even a little bit of meat, like maybe some chicken to it. My children will eat this at least once a week. And my daughter, Mary, if I make it, she will eat it for a meal. She loves it.
I love rice. I, like you said in your column, I'm not sure how many people don't like rice. When I was growing up, one of the main rice dish I would eat, maybe because We didn't have any money at the time because my dad was in seminary. But white rice, spoonful of sugar on top, mix it up, eat it. That's it.
Now, that's think, more of a breakfast. I think of rice and sugar for breakfast. But we would often have rice and butter and not margarine. It had to be real butter. Mm-hmm. And if your mama had just made the rice and put a little pat of butter, it would just melt on it, a little salt and pepper, and eat that with some fried chicken, Derek.
We're going to have to start doing this after lunch. This is not conducive for me.
I'm going to be unfocused the rest of the show now.
But the cookbook, the Crown's cookbook.
Yes.
When I got it in the mail and I started going through it, the first thing that I saw that I wanted to make was a creamy Delta bisque that's made with catfish and cream. And then I flipped on to the appetizers, and there were bite-sized bacon quiche, recipes for crepes. There's a catfish salad, a chicken salad. But the most interesting thing is the first time I wrote about the first cookbook the Crown did, their signature dish is catfish Allison. And it's made with, you just poach the catfish and you add Parmesan, butter, mayonnaise, Worcestershire, Tabasco, and green onions. But in this cookbook, they have a chicken Allison, which is poached chicken with the same sauce on time. And Evelyn says that both of them are equally popular with customers. When you put that topping on, it really doesn't matter what you're putting it on. Yeah, it's just good stuff.
And you know it's good stuff. It comes from the Crown. This cookbook you're talking about comes from the Crown restaurant
in Indianola. Right. Yeah.
So that's some good Delta cooking right there.
It is.
All right, Jenna Parsons, and you can, again, read her column and her Cook of the Week at djournal.com. Jenna, I am now extremely hungry. Thank you for coming on.
You're most welcome.
Okay, let's bring in now our education reporter, the lovely Emma Crawford. Emma, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Brad?
I'm well. Been better. We've covered that already.
Okay.
He wants pity. Give him pity.
Oh, it's sinus season for me. We'll move on, though, from that. Let's talk about a story you wrote, kind of a cool deal going on with the Tupelo Public School District. A parent academy is what they're calling it. And basically what it is it's a chance for parents, I guess new parents or people that have students new to the school district, a way for them to really get more involved with their students. And Christy Luz, am I saying that right?
I think so. Anyway, Luce? Yeah.
Sorry, Christy. she's a district's director of educational enhancement and research. She's new to this position. I guess it's kind of something she's initiated, but she went over the plan Tuesday at the school board meeting. Kind of what was the gist of that plan?
Well, she really kind of, she presented a general look at the Parent Academy and what it's going to be for the district. And it is, some things will be focused toward people who are new to the school district, but it's also just for any parent that's got a student in the district and wants to be more involved with just school things. I mean, just anything that's going on and with their child's education. So the two events that she talked about yesterday were, there's one that is specifically for new kids to the district, their parents, they can just come in and ask questions that they feel need to be answered and give a little feedback on how the district handles newcomers. And so it's a good opportunity for them to get information they need kind of make that face-to-face connection with someone.
Right. And that's September 29th.
September 29th, yes. Okay. And the second event is parent-teacher conferences. And she has put this together, and it's going to be kind of a way for parents and teachers to outline, you know, what they want from a parent-teacher conference, you know, when they come in, what to expect, and just make those more productive so that they're not wasting any time because they have a lot of, you know, teachers have a lot of parents to see and parents have a lot of other things to do too. So making that time that they spend together more productive is hopefully going to be helpful for everybody.
And obviously, I guess this kind of thing is kind of what's in her job description. But what kind of prompted Christy to start something like this? I mean, I guess you just saw a need for even more involvement with parents and communicating with teachers and all that.
Yeah, and the communication between the school district and the parents, I think, was her big thing that she wanted to focus on. And just kind of building that community so that the parents feel like they're a part of the school district more than just, you know, my kid goes to school here, and giving them resources they need. Like, she has a lot of really good ideas for future topics. And, you know, one of them that she's talked about before to me is, like, for middle schoolers, maybe focused for parents who have middle schoolers and they're trying to deal with just the changes that come along with that. Middle schoolers can be a little tough. And
yeah, they can.
Yeah, I'm sure you know. And so just kind of helping parents navigate some of those things that maybe they don't understand as much as educators do, because their teachers are spending so much time with these kids. And I think just giving them some resources that maybe they need.
So this kind of goes beyond the whole PTA thing.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
Which is, I guess, is still important.
Right.
It looks like it's an effort, like you said, to build on something like that and just get more parents involved. Because it can be easy just to shuttle your kids off to school and forget about it and just leave it all up on the teachers. I think we all know that teachers have a tough job. And, you know, if you're not involved with your kids' education, you need to be. So this seems like a good thing that she's doing with the school district. But
yes.
Anyway, well, good deal, Emma. You can read the story at djournal.com, the TPSD Parent Academy. Good stuff. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you.
Once again, Brad, it was a joy to have you back with us today.
It was fun. I feel better now. The show, doing the show, made me feel better.
Did you feel bad while you were gone?
I had.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You felt ill this
physically,
morning, but now you feel
better.
Better.
Yeah, I felt bad.
I have that effect
the
on
past
you.
Week.
I understand.
So, yeah, I'm okay.
Well, I'm glad you're back. I know Chris is glad you're back.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm
kind of glad you're back.
Yeah.
I'm okay with you
Whatever.
Being back. If you could not come back, that would be no excuse. That wraps us up for another day on The Memo. Come back again tomorrow. We'll have a whole new episode for you. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Rate us, leave us a review. Several places you can check us out. Definitely the best place for that roundup is memo.djournal.com online. Also djournal.com, where you can find all the news we've talked about today.
Yeah, and we're on the Twitters as well.
We are on the Twitter at
djournalmemo.
There you go. Right? Djournalmemo.
Cool.
Spell it out phonetically.
Yes.
And at Brad Locke.
At Brad Locke.
Not phonetically, because there's an E on the end.
There's
of
an
it.
E. Don't forget the E.
And at W. Derek Russell is me. Is this person here.
Yeah.
And at Chris Kiefer.
At Chris Kiefer.
At Chris Kiefer.
At Chris Kiefer.
You got such a nice name. Stereo.
I feel like something's coming at me all of a sudden.
Throw it at him. And we'll be back again tomorrow, like I said, with an all-new episode full of new news.
Fun times.
And we'll talk a little bit about the entertainment coming up over the weekend.
We might talk about Podgator, too.
We'd have to talk about our mascot, our Podgator, here in the studio with us. Don't look directly into his eyes, then he takes your soul.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works.
Thanks,
pledge agreement. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.